If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Jason, how do you feel about Becky versus Charlotte at TLC becoming a triple threat with Asuka added to the mix? Is that a net gain, or does it kind of muddy the picture of what was a heated rivalry between Charlotte and Becky?
No, I think it's great. I consider myself an Asuka fan. I haven't exactly been thrilled with her being on the back burner for so long, so I'm happy for her. It's good to see her in a headline position. I figure she's in there because if they're going to do a title change, or frankly, even if they're not doing a title change, Asuka is probably the one who takes the losing fall. I figure she's in there to lose. But I think it adds an interesting little wrinkle. You know, we just saw Becky and Charlotte one-on-one at Evolution. This is going to be a similar type of match. You know, they have the TLC stipulation here. So, you know, adding Asuka to it changes things up a little bit.
It's pretty crazy when you think about the way Asuka's been booked. Since WrestleMania, up for the bulk of the last year. And the crowd is chanting her name when she's standing out there with other women, chanting her name at other events, and her popularity endures. There's something right now about WWE's booking where fans, it can damage certain wrestlers, but there's other wrestlers, Becky, Daniel Bryan for years was one of them, where wrestlers aren't, even Finn Balor. Like, there's certain wrestlers who just aren't hurt that badly by booking, and instead fans sort of go, this is our chance to be defiant, or at least express that we want this wrestler to be presented in a better way, or at least we still like them despite losing all the time on TV.
Yeah, I think it's a cream rises to the top situation where if you have somebody who's that good and has a certain level of fan support, you can put them on the back burner for only so long before the fans start to rebel. You know, we saw that with Becky, like you mentioned. Daniel Bryan probably is the greatest example of that. And to a lesser degree, Asuka. She has been able to maintain her popularity, even though she has not been booked as a central figure on the show. And again, that's one of the reasons why I'm happy to see her inserted into the picture here, because hopefully this is her being elevated back up into the main event scene in the women's division. And hopefully this will carry on beyond TLC.
Yeah, so if Asuka does the job, if she's a designated jobber for TLC, that might mean she was just put here for 1 month, one event, to get a tease of a push, and then she kind of gets knocked back down out of the top tier. But this could also be a star-making opportunity for her, or a resurgence in her character and add another dimension to the depth of the women's division, which it could use. I mean, right now that the top feuds or the top rivalries are obviously involving Becky and Charlotte and Ronda Rousey with Nia Jax in that mix. Some of them aren't on the same brand, and they need to heat up others. And so Asuka's certainly, my top choice among everybody. It seems like Vince isn't quite sure what to do with Asuka in terms of putting her on the microphone or having her interact with others, and that's going to be a challenge. But I hope the creative team figures out a way to present her on television regularly as a top star without worrying about her broken English or her facial expressions being a little corny sometimes.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful only in that because I think the fan support is still there, despite the fact that she doesn't cut a lot of promos and her English is not, I'm sure it's not what they would like for it to be. You know, Vince can't use her in the way that, he might use Becky or Charlotte. And despite that, the fans are still behind her. And I think that's a positive sign for her. Hopefully it sends some kind of a message to them, even if she does the job at the pay-per-view, that, hey, we ought to be doing more with her.
Let's set the table here and introduce ourselves, and then we'll get back to that conversation and also start taking calls. I'm Wade Keller. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Tuesday, November 27th, 2018. And I'm joined today by Jason Solomon from the Solomonster Sounds Off podcast. Jason, great to have you back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long. Thank you for having me back. It's always a blast.
Absolutely. Tell people right now. Let's not wait. Plug your show. Tell people how they can listen and what your show is all about.
Well, in case you haven't figured it out, my show is actually about pro wrestling. I know that's a shocker. I talk about wrestling, WWE, Lucha Underground, NXT, a little bit of New Japan, pretty much anything and everything. Once a week, every Sunday, the show drops on iTunes and Spotify, iHeartRadio, all major podcast platforms. And I have a YouTube channel as well with a bunch of bonus content and pay-per-view reviews. So pretty much I think I have all the major platforms covered.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit more about the women's division. We have Becky and Charlotte earlier in the night. Becky making a return to TV. I think a lot of us were concerned, how bad was that concussion? How long will Becky be out of action? I'm assuming if they're putting her in a TLC match next month, just a few weeks from now, she's fine, hopefully. I mean, hopefully doctors are following proper protocol and that she's done pretty well in any kind of concussion testing. So good news is she's back and she's in the mix right away. What'd you think of her promo and Charlotte's promo, and kind of give a little backstory to how you felt the last few weeks about how they've told this story since Becky's face got broken, as they say?
Well, I thought the opening segment was pretty good, actually. I enjoyed the back and forth between them. Becky is just pretty much firing on all cylinders right now. She has been, Becky Lynch on Twitter has been the most entertaining thing in the entire company. And so it looks like in her promo, she's trying to sort of inject a little bit of that into her promos on screen, which I think is great. As far as I was more than a little worried when I saw what they did with Charlotte last week coming out of Survivor Series, because I didn't know how long Becky would be out for. Is it going to be, 6 weeks, a month? I just didn't know. And it looked to me like they were almost trying to position Charlotte, maybe replacement isn't the right word, but sort of channel what Becky had and almost transfer it over to Charlotte. And I thought, as much as it was nice to see Charlotte, sort of refreshed in a way, I thought the whole, babyface thing was sort of old hat with her. I was very worried about that, and I didn't think it was going to work. I figured, when she was being beaten down by the Iconics last week, it was kind of telling that instead of chanting for Charlotte, they were chanting for Becky. And so now that she's back, I'm relieved in a way, so we don't have to worry so much about them trying to replace her and her lose any sort of momentum. So I'm happy about that.
Do you think last week was hedging? Like, they weren't sure what Becky's timeline was going to be to return? Or maybe they even creatively were trying to figure things out and trying to keep their options open, because the crowd response for Becky caught WWE by surprise. They kept trying to strong arm fans into booing her. The announcers on commentary framed her as a heel, and the fans pushed back harder with cheers. And then with Charlotte, you had the Becky Charlotte hug. You had the complete opposite reaction at Survivor Series that the announcers were scripted to frame her actions as. And then you had the ambiguity last week with Charlotte, with some mixed signals, but her largely as a babyface, because it closed with her going opposite of the Iconics. This week, does it seem like this is a logical landing place for what you saw the last couple weeks with them, or does this look like, okay, Becky can go, so now here's the choice we're making with Charlotte's character?
I think probably a little bit of both. I mean, you mentioned hedging. I think there could have been some of that if they didn't know when she was coming back. Because, again, they matched her up against the Iconics. The Iconics are hated. So it's not as though they had Charlotte come out last week and beat up a popular babyface. But when she came out tonight, there was really no debate about it. She came off very heelish, and it was very clear who the fans were behind. So, maybe a little bit of both. They probably ended up where they were expecting to go. If they got a negative report on Becky, I think they probably would have just plugged Charlotte into her position and had her as this sort of anti-authority babyface with an attitude. And now I think, or I hope, they push her more in the heel direction, because I just think she's just more of a natural villain than a babyface.
Yeah, and it seems like they have kind of resigned themselves, and I hate to say that word because they should be celebrating it, that Becky's a babyface. Like, there's no point in fighting that anymore. I also love Becky just saying, I'm the hottest act in this company, in this industry, and being away, for just any time away is too much time away. I love that Becky's just absolutely owning this idea that she's red hot and amplifying it, almost Conor McGregor-like in his rise in UFC.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess you got to be a little careful you don't go too far with it, because the last thing you want is for the fans maybe to start resenting that. Right. Maybe they start turning the opposite direction. I think she's popular enough right now. People genuinely like her. I don't see them turning against her anytime soon. And I think there's something to be said for having that sort of air of arrogance and cockiness. I think it works well. It's just an attitude that we don't normally see in certainly any of the women. I can't think have caught fire the way that she has. And look, if they play their cards right, and hopefully she stays healthy and everything, I still maintain, as a lot of people do, I'm sure, that she should be and hopefully will be part of the WrestleMania main event picture. I think that should still be the long-term goal. And if they just, stay down the straight and narrow and don't change too much of what she's doing and her act, I think that that's the logical landing spot for her.
Now, Becky Lynch did not intend to have her face covered in blood, and you should not have a face with any blood after you're done shaving in the morning. And part of that comes down to the quality of razor you use, and that's why I endorse Harry's razor. There is a weight to the razor handle, a fit and finish and balance to the shaving experience that is unmatched with anything I've ever tried before. And I'm glad that Harry's is a sponsor of this program, so you can try them out for free. There's a $13 trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. A weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Go to harrys.com/pwtorch to take advantage of this trial set. You get a $13 value trial set by going to harrys.com/pwtorch. That's harrys.com/pwtorch to redeem your offer. And if you like the trial set, Harry's can offer you a good deal going forward. They offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand by selling direct to you over podcasts like this. Just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. If you don't love their shave, let Harry's know within 30 days, and they'll give you a full refund. So go check it out. Get your trial set, a $13 value, at harrys.com/pwtorch.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's bring phone calls into this conversation. If you want to get in line on the phone banks, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We'll begin with area code 803. 803, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is Joseph from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Joseph. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just have two really quick questions, both having to deal with the women's triple threat at TLC. is there a chance that it could actually main event now that it's a triple threat with Asuka? And secondly, did they just add Asuka to have somebody to beat to continue the Charlotte Becky feud?
What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, we were just kind of touching on that. I think that's probably the sole reason why Asuka was added to that match, is for her to take the fall. And I do think, by the way, that there's a very real possibility that they will switch the championship over to Charlotte. And the reason Asuka's in there is so Becky doesn't have to be the one to take the loss. Because I personally, I like the story better of Becky going to the Royal Rumble and winning the Women's Royal Rumble. And she can only do that if she's not the champion. So I'd actually be perfectly okay with that. So I do think that's why Asuka's in there. And as far as headlining TLC, you know, look, I'm looking at the card as it is right now. Braun Strowman and Baron Corbin, if they end up having a match, it doesn't look like it's going to be much of one. I don't see that being the main event. We know Brock Lesnar's not wrestling on that show. And that leaves AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. And I cannot remember, I don't know that it's actually happened at all this year, the last time that the WWE title has headlined a pay-per-view. So I would say the safe bet is that the women are going to go on last.
Boy, AJ and Daniel Bryan turns heel. AJ chases them for the title. They finally have a chance to headline a pay-per-view, and Becky's going to get in the way of the WWE title finally getting a chance to headline a pay-per-view. I think you're right. And Joseph, I mean, I'm not sure if it's a coin flip or not, but it could go either way. I mean, I could very much, even despite how hot Becky is, and I don't think adding Asuka changes in my mind the equation either way. I think either the SmackDown women's match or the SmackDown men's title match could headline. And I think it might come down to what the finish is. If they're going to have a baby face go over or a clean finish in one match, and in the other match either a heel goes over or they end up booking something that's more convoluted and less concrete of a finish, that could dictate it. They would want to end either with a babyface winning or a cleaner finish. That might be the deciding factor, because I could see Vince McMahon making a case either way otherwise.
Yeah, and I would just add this. I think the stipulation is going to be the deciding factor, because it's the TLC pay-per-view. As of right now, Brian and AJ don't have a stipulation yet, and they may not. The women's match is a TLC match, and so I would think they would want to end the show with that.
Yeah, that's a heck of a point. Joseph, what else have you got for us?
That's just it. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a great night.
Great, we appreciate it.
You too.
All right, let's go to 615 next. 615, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade and Jason, this is Kenny from Tennessee.
Hey, Kenny, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, before I get started talking about SmackDown, you mentioned, Jason, your podcast. I want to say I'm a big fan of your podcast, and I even watched the video that you did on your channel talking about that insane spot with that wrestler in Mexico that, you know, threw that cement, which was, I thought, was really just shocking to even think about it. And, you know, that sense, you know, it's glad that we still have some, you know, at least some solid pro wrestling in WWE to talk about.
I would say so.
Segment into that.
Yeah, nothing quite as scary as that, thankfully.
But Lars Sullivan's on his way.
But anyway, yeah. Well, I don't think we'll have to worry about cement blocks, because, you know, his head's sort of a cement block. But I wanted to talk a little bit about actually the Rusev, since it's hard to say his first name. I'll just say Nakamura match tonight.
Hold on, Kenny. Let's work on Kenny. Really? Kenny, let's do this. Shinsuke. There you go.
Shinsuke. I finally got it right.
Yeah, there you go. All right. My day is complete. Go ahead.
All right. But it was just weird that they didn't really have a match. But if you didn't notice the tease where Rusev was kind of tearing his shirt, like, you know, Hulk Hogan-esque. And, you know, there was, you know, like how Rusev was on Twitter, you know, challenging Hogan to a match and everything. And Nakamura was almost acting like WWE corporate, saying, knock that off, you know, type of deal with the him beating him up during the match. And I guess the question is where, what is, you think they're going with Rusev at this point heading into 2019? Cause you know, he's kind of in that, you know, this whole thing with him now, Aiden English is over. Where do you see Rusev heading into 2019 at this point? More of the same, or, you know, or could they possibly be dealing something sort of a tease with Hogan, in a sense, the way that Velveteen Dream did at the last NXT TakeOver.
Yeah, Jason, do you read anything into that with Hogan and Rusev? And then what's Rusev's upside, and how confident are you management will take advantage of whatever you see that upside being?
I'm not very confident at all. As far as, do they have plans? Is there something in the works for him? If there is, I don't see it. I'll be perfectly honest. Well, first of all, I don't think there's anything to the whole Rusev Hogan thing. I think that's just Rusev playing playing things up on social media, which he's prone to do. I tell you what, you know, with all this talk, and we'll see what happens of possible new promotions sprouting up next year, and maybe there'll be some WWE talent, even if their contracts are up, interested in going over. Rusev's the kind of guy who, I don't know where his head is at. He may be making good money and perfectly content where he is. He's the kind of guy I could see maybe leaving, you know, if his deal were coming up soon, and maybe going somewhere else, and maybe he can end up in a prominent role somewhere else in some new surroundings, because I just don't know where you go with him from here. It doesn't look like they really see him above a certain level. Was it this year or last year? We saw him competing for the WWE title against AJ Styles. It might have been over the summer. I think that's as far up the chain as he's going to go. So I don't see him as being somebody who they have big plans for in the next several months.
And when you look at SmackDown's depth chart, I mean, you got AJ Styles as the babyface, former champ now, and then Jeff Hardy, 20 years strong, and you have Rey Mysterio. And really, number four is Rusev. I mean, I don't know if they can afford to not treat Rusev as a top four babyface at the very least. And to do that, I think it involves actually sending the signal to fans that he is a potential future title contender, that he's on a journey, that Shinsuke is getting in the way of his quest, and he needs to have some more promo time and character development, and it just isn't there. And I mean, I think he's good enough, and there's an affection that part of the fan base has for him that doesn't go away completely, but it was a lot stronger before. And this is a case where it's been extinguished a decent amount by lethargic booking. And you know, we talk about other wrestlers, including Asuka, withstanding that, and Rusev's withstood it pretty well. I think people still like him and see him as somebody they want to cheer for or want to see positioned well. But that uprising like Becky has, or even that Asuka's experienced in the last couple big appearances, it's not there for Rusev anymore. And so I think WWE, it would behoove them to get a little more behind Rusev and position him so when whatever he does with Shinsuke is over with, there's something more for him, and fans see him as having some momentum and not just a guy filling space on the roster. They just don't have enough babyface depth to get away with that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that.
Kenny, anything else you want to add?
Yeah. I've noticed, you were just mentioned about Jeff Hardy, you know, celebrating, you know, 20 years in WWE, although not consecutively because he was an Impact wink week. But one of my pet peeves about WWE programming lately, and it goes all the way back to Evolution, is having the entire roster out segments. We saw this twice. You know, we saw it with the opening segment where the whole women roster came out. Thus, we had an impromptu announcement for a battle royal, which turned out to be pretty good. I was glad to see Asuka win. But then we had the entire roster, both baby faces and heels. You know, it's like, oh, you know, just that's my biggest pet peeve. The one thing I don't like about WWE booking today is, you know, like, oh, we got to have the baby faces and the heels together for these type of special announcement type segments. And here they were again with Jeff Hardy. And then when Samojo came out, they all disappeared. And it just drove me crazy. But, you know, I was almost assuming that, you know, Jeff Hardy was going to retire or something. But but the good thing is that we are going to have Jeff Hardy and Samoa Joe, which, you know, correct me, but I think they've wrestled before in Impact, so it's not that new of an idea for a program. But if nothing else, I am looking forward to seeing both of these guys competing against each other in the future. And I'll just throw the same question with Rusev. Where do you see Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy heading into 2019? Do you see them as competing for either the WWE or US title, or are they content to have them in the mid-card, basically?
Well, after the way that Joe was treated at Survivor Series, I was getting a little worried for him. He got some heat back and was a top three or four trend on Twitter for a few minutes there after this segment. Yeah, well, what'd you think, Jason, of the segment? Kenny brought up the stage full of wrestlers, including heels applauding Jeff, and how that bugs him. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that didn't bother me. There are some certain times, because they've done that before, where it will bother me if on the same show where we had people feuding, all of a sudden they're standing within 10 feet of each other. That sort of thing does annoy me. But this didn't bother me. And the way they sort of positioned it, it was a celebration of, you know, a veteran, somebody who's been in the company for a long time. So that thought honestly never crossed my mind once. And maybe it's just because we have seen it so many times. I'm just sort of, you know, resigned to it at this point. But as far as the Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy stuff, you know, one of the things I will say about SmackDown tonight that I enjoyed, certainly far more than, you know, whatever it was that we saw last night, is they set up some new programs going forward. Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy being one. And then we had also Rusev and Nakamura, which is kind of new, I guess. But the Joe and Jeff Hardy thing was comical to me. And wait, I don't know if you picked up on this, but when Joe came out and got on the mic, he made a comment in there about how he hates second chances. And I thought, or the idea that he hates second chances. And I thought that was hilarious, given how many WWE title opportunities that he had. And mind you, he failed at every single one of them. So I thought that was sort of... I found that to be comedic, even if that wasn't the point. But I actually enjoyed that segment a lot, and it's good to see that he's not just going to be lost in the shuffle. And I'm looking forward to what they do with him and Jeff. I get a vibe, you know, Jeff had a great feud with Umaga many years ago, and Umaga is kind of cut from that same mold. He was this Samoan brawler, and I remember he and Jeff had some great matches together. So I sort of hope for the same thing from him and Joe.
I will say the bright side, Kenny, about everybody lining up on stage is that anybody who's been worried about the whereabouts of Sanity, Shelton Benjamin, Mike Kanellis, they got to see them ever so briefly on the stage tonight. They were there, and Gallows and Anderson. So it was sort of a missing persons moment where you could freeze frame and look to see if some of your favorite SmackDown superstars who haven't been around much are still there. Doing whatever it is they do, other than wrestle on SmackDown TV. I didn't see any egregious violations of characters in terms of the heels being out there. I mean, I guess, you know, it doesn't help Sanity, I guess, if WWE was all in on the idea that these guys are uncontrollable and we can't herd them, and they show up and wherever they want, like, to have them line up on the stage. I mean, it takes a little bit of that outlaw spirit away from things. I'm more bothered by it when it's the boss having, you know, or the teacher having the students line up single file for drinking fountain time. You know, it just takes the whole edge off of so many of the characters when they dutifully stand on stage because they can't afford to lose their job or be fined. That said, yeah, this is celebrating a guy who's been around 20 years. It didn't bother me as much as some of the other segments have, and I didn't think any characters were damaged by the brief. By the brief camera shots of them on the stage. And the fact that Samoa Joe didn't participate and, you know, walked out after the fact actually added to the idea that he's a bit of a rebel and was not just doing exactly what he was told and standing on the X on the stage where he was assigned. So it actually, in a weird way, kind of worked for Joe by not being one of the people who just sort of follows orders. Kenny, I appreciate your call.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking my call. And by the way, SmackDown was at Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the Jimmy Butler-free Minnesota Timberwolves. You guys have a good rest of the night.
Thanks. Hey, we're 6-2 since Jimmy's gone, and I'll take Covington over Butler in a one-on-one trade the way he's playing and what he's done to morale on the team. So we're in a good spot. We'll meet him in the finals one of these years. All right, and home of the Vikings who beat the Packers. So Minneapolis beats Milwaukee this week in the Battle of Raw and SmackDown. Home arena cities or home cities. All right. Well, speaking of which, let's break. We want to get to our on-site correspondent who is standing by in Target Center or just outside of Target Center by now in Minneapolis. So we will take a break and come back with our on-site correspondent. We'll also answer mailbag questions. If we didn't get to your call or you want to add something to what Jason and I have said in the first segment of the show, email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. We will be back right after this.
Hey guys, I don't mean to tear you away from more amazing content that Wade Keller is putting out like he does every single week, but I need to tell you about my podcast. It's Sam Roberts, The Last Professional Broadcaster, and every Thursday morning I bring to you Not Sam Wrestling. The biggest names in the world of professional wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling, whether it's WWE superstars like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, NXT superstars like Shayna Baszler in the Undisputed Era, independent stars like Joey Janela, promoters like Court Bauer. The voices that you want to hear from this world of wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling. Plus, every week, we break down everything that's going on in this world with the State of Wrestling segment, which Wade Keller has joined me on more than a few times. Hey, you can get the podcast every single Thursday morning. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, NotSam.com, and you can go the extra mile. There's bonus shows, there's videos, and it's all available at Patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. However you want to get it. It's Not Sam Wrestling. And now, back to our buddy Wade.
All right, I'm now joined by our on-site correspondent who drove all the way to Minneapolis to the newly refurbished Target Center to watch SmackDown Live tonight and see the return of Becky Lynch. You guys drove up from Iowa. Matt and his friend CJ joined me. Matt, thanks for taking time to talk to us on your drive back to Iowa.
Yeah, no problem. This was a good show. This was a really fun show.
Good. Well, let's begin and just talk about what the attendance was like. I noticed at the beginning, I got a little worried because they showed like the three sections in the lower deck opposite the hard camera, did not pan at all. And then, but a couple seconds later, they panned back and showed that at least, you know, the ribbon wrapping back around opposite of the stage looked pretty full too. But how was it in there? How much was tarped off and how many empty seats were there behind the hard cam?
Yeah, so it was just the upper deck, which seems to be the norm now for SmackDown. The upper deck is entirely tarped off. And, yeah, the opposite hard cam was full. Even once you, you know, pan around, that was pretty much full. That's kind of where we sat. But once you get to that the side with the hard camera, yeah, there were some empty spots. But it was – I was surprised the amount of people that were on that side, because usually when callers call in, it seems a lot emptier than what it was. There were some people that were sitting in the rows right next, you know, just a few rows away from the hard cam. There were some splotches of empty seats on that side, but it was a pretty full house.
Now, when how enthusiastic was the crowd? It was hard for me to tell on television how into it just in general they were. And my first reaction was when Becky came out, it didn't feel like the roof came off the place. It felt like she got cheered. She was probably pretty popular compared to others, but it didn't feel just like a surge of energy. What was it like in the building relative to your expectations for Becky when she came up?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was a tad disappointed, I guess, on how the reaction was, but it was still a strong reaction. I was expecting the I doubt they did any remodeling to the roof, but I was thinking that roof would have come right off. Later in the night when her and Charlotte were at ringside for the main event, when she came out, during a commercial, when she came out, that pop was the pop I was expecting at the beginning.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if it was Paige coming out or Paige saying SmackDown Women's Champion and people got loud then. And then when she actually came out, I don't know, they just maintained that. I'm not sure.
But no sense of mixed reaction for Becky. I mean, 100% babyface?
Yes, 100% babyface.
Yeah. And how about Charlotte? I mean, some connections with Ric Flair in this market in Minneapolis. And, you know, it's been tough to tell if she's a babyface or a heel, hugging Becky and facing off against the Iconics. How did the crowd respond to her?
Yeah, this one's actually really interesting because when she first came out right after Becky, at the beginning, she was cheered pretty loudly. It was kind of maybe just a small step below what Becky got, but it was still pretty big. and there were a lot of woos in there, and she was pretty popular. But then again, when she came out later in the night to sit at ringside, she was pretty, you know, I think everyone in that building booed her when she came out later. There were a lot of woos, but there were more boos than cheers when she came out later. So maybe it was her, the promo that she cut that got people to think, okay, if she's going to badmouth Becky, we're not going to cheer for her anymore.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. So how did the pop for Becky compare to the other top baby faces on the show? New Day, AJ Styles, and Jeff Hardy, I guess, would be the other three big ones. Maybe Rusev in the mix there?
Yeah. She had... It was probably more than all of them. I thought the only one that maybe could have taken her on was actually Asuka when she came out for the Battle Royal. People were really, really excited to see Asuka tonight. And like you guys always talk about, the way she's been treated this last year, it's kind of weird that she's still popular, but in the last couple of weeks, she's had a resurgence of popularity, and she had people were really excited to see her tonight.
So how would you group them? Was there a top three or a top five, or was it a steady drop off or a big drop off?
I was thinking about this while we were there, and I think the top five was Becky, Asuka, Jeff Hardy. Then I think it was Charlotte when she first came out at the beginning, and then it was AJ Styles at top.
Wow, that's a pretty big drop for AJ compared to normal, but
yeah,
still.
I was a little I don't know if people were really excited to see him, but it didn't feel like, oh, the WWE champion is here. It was like, oh, let's see what he has to say, maybe. I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. How did what New Day's act go over? I mean, the camera caught a bunch of people laughing at kind of the slapstick frivolity of New Day and Miz being a game foil for them. Did that work in front of the crowd?
I think it did work. I think everyone was entertained. Like, I don't think anyone's... anyone in the crowd, I don't think their heart was invested in the outcome of that match, but I think everyone was certainly entertained. And actually, CJ, I don't believe it, had seen the New Day, and so but he was very entertained by what they did the entire match. And that made me think, I'm like, well, yeah, New Day are still entertaining, and they are still great to see, probably those first few times that you see them, because they are very entertaining. Where for us, this is probably our, millionth time seeing the New Day. So after a while, it can, like we've been noticing the last few weeks, that their reactions aren't quite as strong as they once were.
Yeah, I think that pinpoints what happens is the more casual fans who aren't seeing them in person as often or just on TV every single week, they're still get a reaction from them. Well, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, no, I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, gotcha. So where did Rey Mysterio rank in your list of most popular? He was sort of not announced as coming out, but he interrupted Randy's promo when he was about to say RKO.
Yeah, that pop was pretty big. I think that is up there with AJ's, maybe AJ's and Charlotte's. Those three are kind of all lumped together there at the end. But yeah, that was because I think there was certainly a doubt of his, because we saw AJ just cut a promo. So maybe Randy was just going to cut a promo, but then it was interrupted by Ray. I think people were very excited to see Ray. His pop was pretty good. It was definitely a surprise pop, too, if we weren't expecting his music right then. And, that helped for the excitement.
Jumping back to the women for a second in the Women's Battle Royal, first two parts. Any highlights that kind of jumped out to you in terms of the Battle Royal itself, where the crowd really got into it, and how did they react? Was it Carmella who took a shot at Asuka, I think, pretty early in the match, if I remember right, and how did fans react to that?
I guess I don't remember that spot in the beginning of the match. But
yeah, it might have been middle match, but nevertheless, that stood out to me as maybe it was the way the announcers drew attention to it. But
basically, that entire Battle Royal was we're cheering against anyone who tries to eliminate Asuka.
Yeah.
And she, it was definitely the Asuka Battle Royal there, because, but I guess something that did stand out to me was when it was down to Sonya Deville and Asuka, that the place got very electric. The people were excited, probably because we knew that, okay, we're going to get Asuka. But I think there was a little bit of, hey, I could, you know, we could see Sonya maybe, you know, getting a punch in there or two that's going to knock her out of the ring. And then with Mandy getting involved, that just added to that. That stood out to me. But yeah, pretty much every time it was typically heels that were, you know, dealing with Asuka during the match. Whenever Asuka would get a leg over that top rope, the crowd would start booing and start saying no. And yeah, it was the Asuka show in that main event.
How did the crowd react to the Jeff Hardy video? Were they watching the screen and really into it? And did they kind of stick with that segment? And at what point was it a distraction when all the wrestlers walked out onto the stage? Did that talk about what it was like in the building when that was going on?
I don't think it was a distraction when the wrestlers were on the stage. But people did like the video. At least I liked the video, and people, when they were, you know, I guess pretty much everything in the video was a big high spot of Jeff Hardy's, but
yeah.
When there were, you know, big key moments that everyone remembers, there were a lot of cheers during that part of the video. And I think everyone loved it, because when we came out of the video, people were clapping and cheering. I honestly think a lot of people did think it may have been some sort of retirement thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
When Shane appeared on camera, of course that was the biggest pop of the night. We just leave that out because it's a given. But yep. How do you characterize?
Well, the best in the world, Shane McMahon.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that correction. Yeah. Very apt of you. Yeah. So, what kind of reaction did Shane get, if anything notable, when he did appear on the best in the world? Shane McMahon appeared on camera.
I honestly don't think there was much of a reaction. I think it was, oh hey, here's Shane
texting rudely. Texting. He's on camera and he has to finish his text. How rude is that?
Yeah. Yeah, and then when Miz walked in, you know, that people like the Miz. He's entertaining, that's for sure. But
did Michael Cole get booed? His walk to the ring was not on the TV show.
No, actually, I guess his walk to the ring was completely in the dark.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when it was just him on there, I think people were maybe just taking in, because when the lights came up, well, everyone was on the stage, everything was in the ring, and there's Cole, and I think we knew that was the Jeff Hardy thing, so I'm not really sure if people were in the mood to boo Michael Cole then, if we knew it was about Jeff Hardy, so he might have escaped on that one.
So was there anything that you saw before SmackDown went on the air?
Yeah, it was the 205 Live taping.
Oh, of course, yeah. Anything stand out from that?
Yeah, what I assume will be the main event on Wednesday was the last match. It was a tag team match between Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali and Tony Nese and the champion, Buddy Murphy. That tag match was actually really good. It started out, everyone was like, okay, yeah, we know these are like the top guys in 205 Live. And there were actually a guy behind me that was like, yeah, this show's better in person than it is on TV. And then even at the end of that tag match, he was saying, this match is really good. And like toward the end, I was actually surprised the pops that they were getting from the entire arena during their match. So it was a pretty good tag match there at the end.
Cool, cool. And how about after SmackDown went off the air?
Yeah, after SmackDown was Mixed Match Challenge, which was really fun. Yes, CJ just gave it a thumbs up. It was fun. I guess it wasn't as like jokey and silly as it maybe usually is, but I mean, we were all hoping that Curt Hawkins was going to get that win, and I guess maybe he did, maybe he didn't. For anyone that's going to watch it later, but but then. After Mixed Match Challenge, AJ's music played and he two-sweeted Finn Balor and Bayley. And
And then Jeff Hardy came out, and it was AJ and Jeff versus Samoa Joe and Randy Orton in the dark main event there. And in what was, if we're lucky, it was 5 minutes long. And Jeff Hardy hit Samoa Joe with the Twist of Fate, and then a Swanton Bomb, but like from the ground. Like, he did not go on the top rope. He just like did a flip onto him. And so I think the crowd was maybe wanting a legit Swanton Bomb, but either way, the music played, they walked around the ring, shook hands, and, you know, kissed babies and all that. It was a pretty good ending.
Yeah, all right, cool. So what did CJ think of the experience of seeing a WWE TV production for the first time? And it's been, like you said, I think, what, about 10 years since he has been to a WWE event, period?
Yeah, it was pretty great. But I haven't watched a WWE event in 10 years, probably. And I only knew about half of the faces. But the faces I did know, it was really great to see. And, you know, Randy Orton still being Randy Orton.
Yep.
It was great to see Jeff Hardy. AJ Styles was new, but I can see why he seemed as popular as he was.
Let me stop you. Why?
Sure.
What jumped out to AJ that made you? Was it just the dark match and what he did there, or his promo too?
Well, it was his promo, because it was clear that from what he was saying that he had lost something dear to him and lost it in a very cheap way.
So I think
the show did a pretty good job of setting that stage for people who didn't necessarily know his history and what had just happened to him.
Cool. Yep, that makes sense.
But my favorite part of the show was definitely everything to do with the women. The start of the show there when you introduce the big stars, and then that final battle royale. I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce her name right.
Asuka.
I'm definitely an Asuka fan now. She was fantastic.
That's cool. What now, Becky? Right now, she's not exaggerating when she says she's the hottest thing in the industry. I mean, she's right out. Did she exude star power? I mean, you probably hadn't seen much of her before. What did you think of her ring presence? Did she own the room? Did she own the ring when she was in it? In your opinion?
Oh, absolutely. She was the cockiest person in the ring, and you know, having not seen her fight before, it still felt like she had earned it. So that's definitely going to be a good match at TLC.
Wow.
Cool.
I don't think he could have put it better. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was the cockiest one there, but everyone loves that. And that it was, it was great. She's definitely sometimes you ask what we'll remember from the night.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that Becky Lynch was here, because, you know, last week I was like, maybe she wasn't going to be here this week. But I'm really glad I got to see Becky Lynch. I got to see her walk out twice tonight. So it was she's the best thing going.
CJ, for not having been to a WWE production before that was televised live, what jumped out to you, good or bad? Anything unexpected or noteworthy about seeing it in that format, not as opposed to sitting at home on TV or just a house show where it's just for the fans in the building?
It was a little interesting. I kind of agree with Matt. The crowd wasn't necessarily as enthusiastic as they make it seem on TV all the time. And maybe that's just because the things that stick out in my mind are the pay-per-views that I've seen. And, you know, everyone's crazy for this.
Yeah.
But another thing that was interesting was you could kind of tell when the hits on the mat were being amplified. And I can't say I noticed that watching from TV. So those are the two big things that jumped out at me. It was still a great experience. It was just interesting seeing, you know, kind of behind the veil live, how that kind of comes off.
Was there anything about it that was either boring or tedious because of commercial breaks or video packages or anything like that? Or did the pace of the show seem to move nicely and it was kind of cool to see the TV aspect of it?
I think the pace of the show moved great. And actually, I forgot to get something to eat at the stadium, and I just kind of never did, because there was always something going on. There was a match, there was a video on the screen that was, if not really action-packed, it was at least funny. It was nice to watch. So I think they did a pretty good job of filling the necessary dead time commercial breaks, and then pretty much everything on stage was fun to watch. I mean, I think it was a great experience.
All right. Cool. Well, just overall, any other thoughts either of you have that I haven't asked about that stand out from the show?
There was a point in the Randy Orton beatdown of Rey Mysterio where the Minneapolis crowd, I think, turned heel on me because they started cheering for Randy Orton. And I'm like, why? How? Of all, like, I get you love Randy Orton, but even other crowds, when they love Randy Orton, when he does terrible things against people that you love, you still boo the guy. But there were a few pockets in the crowd that were cheering for Randy Orton and chanting his name, and I was offended. My little snowflake heart melted there, Wade. And 'cause Rey Mysterio didn't deserve that. He deserved the whole place to be feeling bad for him, but there were, you know, some fans can be pretty weird.
That's great. That's funny. Anything else noteworthy? Otherwise, you can tell me also what you paid for your tickets and where you sat, and if you thought it was a good value and a good spot to sit.
Yeah, we sat in the lower bowl. Well, I guess there wasn't an upper bowl because it was tarped off. So yeah, but we weren't on the floor, so we were in the lower bowl. We were maybe like 6 or 7 rows up. And we were not, I guess, technically the opposite hard camera side, but we were around that corner that hardly ever gets showed.
Yeah.
So it was actually great seats. I paid $50 for them, which I thought was a steal at the time, and now I really think was a steal because they were really good seats. So I'm certainly happy with the value. And again, I mean, I think I would have paid more just to see Becky Lynch walk out and into the so. Yeah, I'm pretty happy.
Any noteworthy observations as far as most popular merchandise, or was it real diversified, or not a lot of merchandise? Anything stand out in that regard from just looking at fans wandering around and in the stands?
Yeah, it was real diverse for sure. But I think the top ones were a lot of Becky Lynch shirts and different iterations of it. But the man stood out the most. That T-shirt, a lot of people had that on. And there were a lot of different John Cena shirts as well. So I think the top three with shirts that I saw were a lot of Becky Lynch, a lot of John Cena, and a lot of AJ. But then there was pretty much one of almost every superstar that had a T-shirt because there were a lot out there. So
interesting. Cool. So Matt and CJ, unless I'm leaving anything out, I appreciate you sharing your experience.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on, Wade.
Absolutely. So next time they're in near your way in Iowa, you come back up to town, let me know.
Yeah, awesome. I will. Thank you.
All right, cool conversation there with Matt and CJ. Good to get a couple different perspectives on things and that first impression of Becky Lynch, for instance, and AJ Styles. It's really cool. Jason Solomon will be back with me in the mailbag segment. He has been rudely texting nonstop throughout the whole segment here. I don't know. Maybe he's texting Shane McMahon, who was rudely texting during SmackDown. I'm not sure. But Jason will be back with me for the mailbag segment coming up after the break. Speaking of mailbag segments, though, this is your chance to email the flagship edition of the show this week. Send your email questions for Jason Powell and me when we record the flagship to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can talk about WWE topics, look ahead to WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble. You can also talk about All Elite Wrestling and all the different angles regarding that developing situation. Same thing with ROH and their pay-per-view coming up next month. What's up with Impact Wrestling? Anything, really. Email us. It's the flagship. That's where we broaden the scope to the entire wrestling industry. So send your questions for Jason Powell and me to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Send them by Wednesday afternoon, middle to late afternoon, so you get the questions in time for our recording session. So we'll be back right after this with Mailbag with Jason Solomon. All right, we are back for the Mailbag segment of the program. Jason Solomon still with me. I'm Wade Keller, and we're about to address a few emails here. First up is Paul L. in Ridge, New York. He says, what did Charlotte do to deserve this title match? She lost on 2 pay-per-views in a row, once to Becky and once to Ronda. Shouldn't she be moved to the back of the line? Or at least if they want a triple threat TLC match, have all the women on SmackDown in a battle royal, and have the finish to it and have a finish to it that makes it a triple threat. Does WWE realize that just giving Charlotte that title match is one of the reasons that fans turned on her and backed Becky? I think at this point, WWE needs a director of common sense just to slap the writers and say, no. But they did do one thing right with the women's division. They gave us Asuka in that TLC match. It seems the crowd loved that, and so do I. Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if WWE could tell stories in a sports-like logical way, Jason, and have title matches always be deserved. This does seem like an intensely personal issue, and they are the established two top stars, and Charlotte certainly has a legacy of title reigns. So you can sort of make a case based on that. It's sort of the Brock Lesnar rule in UFC. If you're a big enough name and you have championships in the past, we'll let you leapfrog everybody else who's been fighting it out for number one contendership. I think the fact that nobody who seems obviously deserving of that spot is getting ousted from it, and that Asuka is actually being added to it, probably takes away any resentment fans would have of Charlotte. Plus, I'm not sure WWE minds if people resent Charlotte getting a spot that maybe they don't think she deserves, because at this point, I think they do want Becky to be cheered and Asuka to be cheered, and Charlotte is going to be positioned as the one who arrogantly says she's genetically superior and entitled through lineage to opportunities such as this.
Yeah, and she's a heel now. It almost doesn't matter. It plays well into the whole idea that she's handed things and doesn't always deserve it. I think the lack of depth that they have in the women's division on that brand right now is really hurting them. And when you really look at the landscape of the women's division on SmackDown, who else would make sense? You know, as far as being, they could have just had the Battle Royal, I suppose, and crowned the number one contender that way. But I think Charlotte is sort of at a different level from everybody else, where yeah, she didn't beat Ronda at Survivor Series, but she did lay a good beating on her. Becky still obviously wants to fight Charlotte, is not fond of her. People, you know, cheered when Paige made the announcement of the match. So I think people are willing to overlook that in this case. But yes, does it make sense? It doesn't. But that's what happens when you don't have any sort of formal ranking system in place.
Where do you see this going in terms of WrestleMania? How do they get to where they ought to go for the WrestleMania top women's matches?
Well, I mean, what I'm hoping, and the thing that would make the most sense to me, is I think you, at TLC, I think with Asuka being in there, I think it's safe for them to switch the championship from Becky without having to make Becky look weak, without having to beat her directly. And for Charlotte to get the championship, I think you talk about people resenting her and getting her even more heat. I think putting the title on her and taking it off Becky would do a lot to accomplish that. And you have Becky Lynch throw her name as the first one in the hat for the Women's Royal Rumble match in January. And I mean, I picture it now, you know, they're going to have Royal Rumble in this big baseball stadium. Women's Royal Rumble match comes down to two women, Becky Lynch and Nia Jax. And you have Becky eliminate Nia, wins the Royal Rumble. And the way they do the stipulation, of course, is that you get to choose which champion you want to face. Now, I would think most people would think that, Becky would choose Ronda. But if Charlotte is the SmackDown Women's Champion, there is at least some question you can plant, some doubt in people's heads. Oh, who's she going to choose? You can drag that out and milk that for a few weeks. And in the end, Becky would choose Ronda. I feel very strongly that that should be the WrestleMania main event. And one of the cool things about them inserting Asuka is if they really do want to keep her in an elevated position, you could reasonably do Charlotte Asuka too at WrestleMania next year. So you can get a double, kind of a double women's main event out of it. They had a great match at WrestleMania this year, and you can do that. You can get Becky versus Ronda, and you could do Charlotte versus Asuka.
Yeah, no, I think you mapped out a really good path there. And having Asuka re-elevated gives them that fourth woman wrestler, if it's not Nia Jax, to pair off for two big women's one-on-one matches at WrestleMania. And if they do Becky versus Charlotte, I mean, they could conceivably do a triple threat of some kind or a fatal four-way for the SmackDown women's title if they can get a couple other women wrestlers heated up where there's personal issues and fans want to see it. I think title matches at WrestleMania ought to be one-on-one. WWE seems to be moving away from multi-person matches, especially title matches. They're not doing them as often as they used to. But as long as Becky and Ronda get one-on-one, get that one-on-one spotlight, then I'm That's my main wish in terms of not having a multi-person match. I'd really be bummed out if they had Charlotte somehow, some way, and I don't know how they'd get there and make it a triple threat or doing, you know, a four-way with Nia too. I want that one-on-one Becky Ronda match that everybody's been anticipating.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat. I mean, I would be very upset, very disappointed if they do that. It should be one-on-one. I feel the money match still is Ronda and Becky one-on-one. Now, if they want to finish what they started at Survivor Series, you do have the option of having a Ronda-Charlotte rematch at the Royal Rumble. The only thing that you'd have to navigate is the brand split, because they are on separate brands. And as you know, Wade, Survivor Series is the one night of year that we have Raw versus SmackDown, even though you and I both know that's BS. So you'd have to figure out your way around that. Royal Rumble is going to be a big stadium show. And I don't think if you did Ronda and Becky, or rather Ronda and Charlotte in a rematch, that it would be somehow less than, you know, if they did it at the Rumble. So if they really wanted to do that match, they still can do it. I just wouldn't do it at WrestleMania. And on the flip side, if you are of the opinion that, well, we need to have one-on-one Becky versus Nia, how do you, I mean, you could do that finish in the Rumble.
Yeah. But
how do you not have a one-on-one match? Correct me if I'm wrong. I think there are two pay-per-views between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania this year, which is probably one too many. But you can do a singles match between Becky and Nia on either one of those shows, especially if Becky has already announced that she's going to go for the Raw Women's title. You know, if that makes her an official member of the Raw roster, you can do that match, and maybe she even puts up her WrestleMania shot. So there are ways to get those matches done without having to put everybody in the same match in the Mania main event.
All right, let's. Oh, by the way, we're speaking of the brand split, keeping maybe Charlotte and Rousey from each other. Was your mind just blown when you saw Michael Cole on SmackDown? I mean, who thought we'd ever see that, Jason?
Nothing surprises me. After this week, nothing surprises me anymore.
All right. Along these same lines, Tim B. says, first of all, I just want to note how much better this episode was than Raw last night. All of the segments were, for the most part, enjoyable, and the show didn't drag. And as you said, Jason, they started new feuds, they forwarded storylines, things served purposes. So anyway, he goes, if this is going where I think it's going, this is the right call in terms of setting things up for WrestleMania. They can now get the title off of Becky without her taking a pin or submission, thus keeping her strong while freeing her up to win the Rumble and challenge Ronda at WrestleMania. Also, with Charlotte or Asuka winning the title, they can lay the groundwork for a rematch from last year's WrestleMania. Great minds think alike. Of course, though, if it doesn't go where I think it's going, then I retract everything I just said. In either case, thanks for great content each week, and keep up the great work. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, Jason, I mean, he's along the lines that we are here, especially what you said, as far as where you see things going. And it does seem like this show set up a lot of what, if you're optimistic and you've got a certain view of how you want to see things go, it does seem that they're headed that way.
Yeah, I mean, the signs are all there, and it would take a lot to, and it's not as though they don't get handed things sometimes and they find a way to screw it up or have their own ideas and get stubborn. And it's very possible that could happen too. But I see a very easy path to get to what I think should be the key matches, the key women's matches at WrestleMania. And I mean, I don't know that everybody would agree. I think a lot of people probably look at WrestleMania next year as the most logical place to have the first women's WrestleMania main event, especially, you know, with what happened to Roman Reigns. And Roman has been headlining Mania, I think, four, maybe five straight Mania shows going back to WrestleMania 31. With him out of the picture, as far as WrestleMania next year, it really does open the door for there to be sort of a fresh face or just a fresh match. So it really feels like it's the right time. And what I like about it, it's not just, well, it feels like the right time because we're doing all these women's firsts, right? This is going to be the first ever women's TLC. And we had the first women's Royal Rumble, women's Money in the Bank. It's not about, well, we have to just have the first women's WrestleMania main event. They have a legitimate match that I think, regardless of gender, people look at it and go, this is the hot match. This should be the main event of WrestleMania.
Yes. And I mean, we got to see the rest of the lineup, but I mean, it was red hot as Becky is right now, and Ronda being the top paid full time you know, with a little asterisk next to that in terms of how many house shows she works. But I mean, there's absolutely no reason not to headline WrestleMania with that and have it be a first. And it won't seem like charity. It won't seem like a gesture. It'll seem like it earned it at the right time.
Right.
All right, Zach B. in Texas says, first of all, Jason, I love your Solid Monster sound bites on YouTube. They're highly entertaining and usually right on target. Doesn't make you want to know, when did you think I wasn't on target?
Maybe I don't want to know.
That's true, yes. That being said, it was so good to see Becky Lynch back. The show was immediately better than last week. It was so much fun watching her own Charlotte on the mic again. It was nice to see they're going with Charlotte as the heel, like she should have been all along. I also love that she didn't give Nia Jax the benefit of mentioning her at all. Interesting. I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you, though, Wade. I think adding a third person to TLC is brilliant. I'm swayed towards that now. Well, I don't brilliant, but I'm swayed towards it being very logical. It made all the women look like legit contenders as opposed to riffraff like Raw. Also, this way Becky can lose the title without being pinned and Charlotte can win it. Let's face it, this match is more of a vehicle for that than another chapter in Charlotte-Becky rivalry. Free of the title, Becky can enter the Royal Rumble, win it, and set her sights on Ronda. I assume that Charlotte wins at TLC and we get a champion versus champion match at the Rumble, but do you think there's a chance Asuka wins? Just one more thing. Can Corey's wife give him a hall pass so he can sleep with Mandy Rose and get it out of his system? Zach in Texas. Take that up with Corey's wife on Twitter or Instagram or something. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways the finish in the triple threat can go in TLC. But I don't see a reason why Asuka wouldn't walk out with that championship. In a way, I think rather than having her be the designated jobber, having her win is a lot. It gives her an extra boost that then can lead to Charlotte challenging Asuka as a heel, chasing the sort of underdog champion, I guess would be the way Asuka would be seen based on how she's the success that she had in most of 2018.
Yeah, and let me just say, for those who may have forgotten, long before Corey had this obsession with Mandy Rose, he had an obsession with Eva Marie. So this is sort of a developing pattern for Corey Graves.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like that idea. The idea that Asuka wins the championship at TLC, and then because to me, I look at that and I say, well, inevitably that's leading to Charlotte beating her for the championship either at the Rumble or WrestleMania. We already saw Charlotte beat her once. Me personally, I'd rather not have Charlotte just beat her a second time. So I like the idea better of just Charlotte winning the championship, because if Becky's going to lose, people love Becky, I would think you want to get that championship on somebody who the people can hate because they, you know, took the championship away from their favorite. I don't really see how that benefits Asuka. I think it gets more heat on Charlotte if she's the one. And not only does she take the title, but she didn't beat the champion for it. So she doesn't exactly come off as the most deserving champion. And that paves the way for Asuka to be in the challenger's role going into, let's say, WrestleMania. I like that scenario a lot better.
All right, we'll go to another Zach in Indiana. Hey, Wade and Solid Monster, I wanted to talk about the triple threat match they set up at TLC tonight between Becky, Charlotte, and Asuka. I think the triple threat is overdone, but I think if they were going to do one, there isn't one bigger in SmackDown than this one. Do you agree? Yes, I agree with that. Also, I think the fact that it's a TLC match takes away from it tremendously. If they're going to have a triple threat, I'd honestly rather see it, but just a regular triple threat match. What are your thoughts? Everyone go VIP and check out Solid Monster's podcast. He does a great job every Sunday and also on his YouTube channel. That's enough plugs for you guys. Have a good night. Zach, we never tire of plugs. Appreciate your kind words. So if the goal is to have the women headline TLC, then you almost have to have the stipulation, I think, as you astutely pointed out, you have to have the TLC stips on it. I mean, you could have a TLC match with others not headline, and it would be quite the statement then to have Becky, Charlotte, and Asuka headline in a triple threat match with a women's title on the line. But it also might work against the women if it feels like there's been this crazy TLC type action, and now they've got a crowd that's seen that, and now they have to settle in for, quote, a regular match. It might add a little bit of a challenge for them if they wanted the match to go on last. So a lot of moving parts here in terms of what might have gone into the decision making. But I agree, it is far and away the biggest triple threat match. I mean, they tried to add a little drama with Sonya Deville. I'm not sure how many people bought into the idea of her getting elevated and getting that spot. I think it was pretty foreseeable that Asuka was going to be the one. So, yeah, Jason, your thoughts on it, the TLC stip being added and the pros and cons of not having it be a TLC match.
I'm fine with the stipulation. I like it. I just think it adds a little, an interesting wrinkle, you know, turning it into a ladder match and, you know, having them literally chase and climb for the championship. We saw what Becky and Charlotte could do at Evolution with all the weapons and the tables and everything. It would almost feel not a letdown, but it would almost be a little underwhelming coming off a match like that to have a quote unquote regular match. So the fact that they'll have access to different toys and weapons, I think, is fine. I think they're going to go in there and they're going to kill it. I mean, I remember Asuka having, I believe it was a ladder match, or maybe it was a last woman standing in NXT with Nikki Cross, and that was a hell of a match. So we know that Asuka, there's no issues with her, you know, working that type of stipulation. I'm looking forward to seeing if they come up with some creative spots. You know, the more you see matches like this, I would imagine for the talent, it becomes harder and harder to come up with innovative stuff that we've not seen before. So I think they probably look at it as a challenge, and I'm looking forward to the stipulation. If it were me, I would do exactly what they're doing here. I don't have any issue with that at all.
What happens when Asuka and Becky are fighting each other? Do fans have trouble, you know, choosing who to side with? Do they just do the "Let's go Asuka, Becky Lynch" dueling chant, and everyone's chanting it together as opposed to opposing each other? Do they chant "Fight Forever"? Like, or do you think fans would actually take sides for one and against the other when they are inevitably doing battle with Charlotte, you know, recovering at ringside?
I think it's a split crowd situation. I think you're going to have "Let's go Becky, let's go Asuka." I think you're going to get a lot of yes chants because people are going to be excited to see the two of them go one-on-one. So I think it'll be a split crowd. If they were going to lean in one direction over the other, I think they would lean towards Becky. But I think both of them are popular enough. People would just be excited to see them go one-on-one. I mean, look, we have seen so many times, and I'll use Asuka as an example. After WrestleMania, we had Asuka and Carmella in a program that went on for two or three pay-per-view matches, I think. And those matches were not particularly good. Carmella was not particularly good in those matches. And there was just this feeling of Asuka, who's one of their best performers in the women's division, being in there with somebody who was not at her level. Yeah. You know, being in there with somebody who was, frankly, inferior. Here, it would be the exact opposite, where you would have two women who it feels like these are two of the best women that they have. They're on the same level. This is going to be a hell of a match. Finally, you have a match that people can get excited for. So I think people would be into it. They'd be cheering for both of them.
All right, up next, Freddie from Salisbury, England says, "Hey, Wade and Jason, Becky Lynch is the biggest star in WWE right now, and it finally looks like they made the right call to make her a babyface. Charlotte acted more like a heel tonight, but it seems uncertain which way she'll go. Do you think she is slowly turning heel? Thanks for all you do. Everyone should go VIP. I joined in early 2017 and highly recommend it. With new podcasts every day, it's impossible to ever run out of great content." Thanks, Freddie. I don't think she's... Well, I don't know if it'll be slowly. I mean, I think before they get to TLC, they ought to make it pretty clear that that Becky is Becky, and you're allowed to cheer, and the announcers aren't going to throw anything in the way of that with commentary judging her. And Charlotte is the heel, and Asuka is a clear-cut fans' choice babyface. The risk of Charlotte being one heel against two babyfaces could work in Charlotte's favor with some fans having sympathy on her. I'm curious if booking will, you know, address that or try to cover for that by creating tension in the meantime between Becky and Asuka.
That's what I would do. Yeah. I would have Asuka come out on television, whether it's next week or the week after, and try to, you know, lay waste to Becky, even if it gets her some boos. It would show that she's not playing favorites here. She's in it to win it. And it doesn't matter whether it's Charlotte, doesn't matter whether it's Becky. She wants to win the championship. So that's what I would do. And as far as Charlotte, what is she? I don't know that she's a, you know, full-blown heel just yet, but I sure hope that that's the direction they're going, and I think it is. I think it should be pretty clear within the next week or two exactly where she stands. But I think that that is the best role for her. I think probably a lot like her father, she was born, I think, to play that part. And hopefully she will be a heel in this feud.
Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week. And also all seven PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com. All right, Matt R., what would we talk about if we didn't have the women's division? I wonder that sometimes. Matt from Long Beach, California. I guess just a lot more Baron Corbin, and are you on the right side of history? Hey, Wade and Jason. Apologies if you talked about this in the first part of your show, but do you guys think the outcome of the Becky-Charlotte TLC match will be a dead giveaway of who is going to face Ronda at WrestleMania? And if so, is it a catch-22? If it's the loser, then they don't look as strong as when they get to Ronda. And if it's the winner, how do they get them to the other show storyline-wise to feud with Ronda since they have the title? And once that happens and Becky or Charlotte is left to have a feud with the title on SmackDown, who is there to feud with? It seems like all the women on that show have been defined down except for Becky and Charlotte. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Keep up the great work. I mean, I think we covered a lot of this, but I think they can navigate this. And I do think the triple threat and the way they book that finish and is one of the ways that they can navigate some of the things that Matt brings up. Jason, what's the hurdle that you're most worried about them not jumping? Having an explanation or having the wrestler who doesn't hold the title but wins the Rumble still seem credible, or having Asuka, if she ends up being the challenger to Charlotte, presumably, it seemed credible, and how to get her there. I mean, but there's so much time to tell that story. Wherever they end up having the matches, Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, Fastlane, WrestleMania, they've got five pay-per-views from tonight until WrestleMania to tell a lot of stories and a lot of episodes of SmackDown to try to build the conflicts and the explanations, really, for each stage of this.
Yeah, I mean, before WrestleMania, they got four pay-per-views, and that's a lot. So a lot can happen between now and then. As far as the risk of the loser of the match looking weak, and how do you argue that? I think that's why it was so important to get that third person in there. And so, for example, if it's going to be Becky challenging Ronda at WrestleMania, it doesn't hurt Becky. First of all, it's not going to hurt Becky anyway because she's so popular right now. But if she doesn't take the losing fall, it doesn't hurt her in the least. And if anything, it creates more sympathy because she got effectively screwed in a way out of her championship without either being the one to be pinned or I guess in this case, if it's for the championship, I don't know if pinfalls would count. I keep forgetting that, but I don't think it's going to hurt her at all. I really don't. And I'm not too concerned about that. And I think, Becky throws her name in the hat for the Rumble. She'll be fine. And you could create some tension, too. By having it, I mentioned, having it come down to Becky and Nia, you could throw Asuka in there too. You know, Asuka could be part of that final group and really maybe try to create some doubt. I think if Becky is in the final three or four, it's going to be pretty obvious who's winning that Rumble. I mean, I can't imagine if Nia won, what there'd be a riot there, Chase yes. Field. And for that reason, I think Vince McMahon might actually consider that. And then have Becky, beat Nia for the shot the month after. So I certainly am not advocating for that. I do not want to see that. But I think that's the way to go.
When you look at the rest of the women's divisions on both Raw and SmackDown, is there a dark horse to be involved in some of these matches that are going to have to fill the pay-per-views between now and WrestleMania and some of the TV storylines? I mean, can they get by with just Charlotte, Becky, Asuka, and Nia? Or do you have to introduce one or two others on each of the brands to bridge your way all the way there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, on SmackDown, I don't know who that would be. They seem to be doing more with Mandy Rose. I don't think she's necessarily, you know, going to be in that position as like a focal point. On Raw, I would Ember Moon would be that person for me if there was a so-called dark horse, somebody who could be featured more prominently or, you know, maybe be in title contention between now and WrestleMania. She's too good not to be used in a prominent role like that. You know, I look at Sasha Banks and Bayley. I still think the end result probably at WrestleMania is women's tag team titles, and they certainly seem to be building. I mean, we see all these different tag team combinations on both shows, Nia and Tamina, Sasha and Bayley. And before she got hurt, you know, you had Alexa and Mickey, the Iconic. So it seems like they're building to that. I think that occupies Sasha and Bayley going into WrestleMania. I don't see either one of them being featured in any kind of really prominent singles role. And I think what they're going to have to do, and maybe they don't want to do this before WrestleMania, maybe after WrestleMania, they're going to have to introduce some new faces. They're going to have to call up at least one or two women, at least one per brand, if not more, from NXT, because they need some fresh faces. I think, especially on Raw, it feels like it's the same faces over and over and over again. Alexa, we don't know when she's going to be ready to come back, you know, to an in-ring role. So they're going to have to introduce some new faces, but I could see them not wanting to do that until after WrestleMania.
I think one other name to throw in there is Natalya and the possibility of her turning on Ronda and having a match with Ronda at one of those pay-per-views between either at the Rumble, while everyone else is doing their business in the Rumble itself, or afterwards. I could see Natalya turning heel. They could also do a tag team feud, you know, Ronda and Natalya against two heels on Raw, or do a tag team feud of some type also with some of the names that I mentioned. Like, you could do Ronda and Natalya against Nia Jax and Tamina. You could do Charlotte and Becky as a tag team, depending on the story they tell in the next few weeks and at TLC. Or Asuka and Becky as a team against Charlotte and another heel. So if they did that, you know, they could. That's where Mandy Rose maybe fits in. I mean, there's really no other credible heel who could do that. So need to build in the team position. Yeah, Jason.
Yeah, and I think I'm surprised that they haven't pulled the trigger up to this point as far as turning Natalya. I mean, months ago it seemed like it was inevitable, even if Ronda didn't quite realize it, that was the direction they were going to go in. At some point, Natty would turn on her. There would be a championship match or a program between them. So I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet, although I wonder if Natalya's family situation maybe delayed that. You make a great point in that you could do it before WrestleMania. That would give Ronda a title defense between the Rumble and then whatever she may do with Becky at Mania. I mentioned this whole idea of women's tag team titles. If they put together a formal tournament and you really want to make this thing feel special, even though Ronda is the Raw Women's Champion, you can say, look, you know, me and Natty, we're going to be part of this. You know, we want to be part of this tournament. We want to fight for the tag team titles. Of course, they wouldn't win. Maybe they'd go as far as the quarterfinals or semifinals. Something would happen. Maybe they would lose, or Natty would lose. And maybe that's the impetus for her to just lose it. And she goes off on Ronda, attacks her, and that could lead to a match. I could see something like that happening as well.
I think Shane McMahon will run it at the end and win the women's tag team tournament at the very
He is the best in the world.
Yep. And he does.
And that is
run it at the end.
That is not exclusive to genders. He is the best in the world of all genders.
Yes. All right. What do you think, by the way, of AJ Styles and his response to Daniel Bryan's heel promo establishing the new Daniel Bryan last week?
I liked it. AJ came out. He looked pissed off, as he should be. I think far too often. You know, this is one of the criticisms I had of what they did with Ronda. I love the match with her and Charlotte at Survivor Series and the vicious beatdown. But then she showed up on television the next night and she had these bruises on her body, but she was all smiles. And I just thought to myself, you know, shouldn't she be more upset about what happened the night before? Well, AJ's been gone for 2 weeks. He came out tonight. He looked like he was in a foul mood. You know, he wasn't happy about Daniel Bryan kicking him low and taking the championship from him. And he had this sort of fire in his voice. And I liked it. I liked that a lot. Daniel Bryan not being there, I thought was fine. He doesn't have to be on the show every single week. It builds a little bit of intrigue, you know, where he's concerned. And so I like what they're doing here. And with the two of them, it's going to be hard for them, I think, to go to TLC and have anything but a good match.
I'm glad Daniel Bryan wasn't on the stage applauding for Jeff Hardy. That would have ruined the idea that he wasn't there.
Well, let me ask you this. I didn't see him there, and I certainly hope he wasn't there. If Randy Orton was on the stage, I don't believe he was there.
I don't think Randy was on the stage applauding. So, and that would have been insane.
Yes, that would not have made much sense.
No, not at all. Now I got to go check the tape.
Let me throw a question out to you real quick.
Yeah,
because they were talking tonight about Lars Sullivan. He's on his way, coming soon. You know, we don't know where he's going to land. I'm of the opinion that the right place for him to go is SmackDown, because Raw, in a lot of ways, is the land of the giants. And, yeah, look, Lars is a big guy, but if you put him next to somebody like Strowman or even McIntyre, I think it sort of exposes him in a way. And me personally, I like the idea of him working with smaller guys like Jeff Hardy or like Rey Mysterio, or maybe even being a heavy for Daniel Bryan. So I was curious to get your take on where you think he might land.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point in terms of, in NXT, you can seem like a giant and then you show up on the main roster. And if you're standing next to Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre, even Bobby Lashley, it takes away some of the mystique of being a monster. So, I mean, I think Lars is he's such a throwback, and he's so different than so many of the other very talented wrestlers and marketable wrestlers in WWE. He's so such a unique character for this era. So, I had some theories yesterday in terms of how he could be incorporated into Raw, but I think the better place in the long run, for the logical reasons you said, is on SmackDown, because feuding with AJ Styles for or not for the championship down the line, if they keep him strong, is something you can do. But in the meantime, I mean, Rey Mysterio or Jeff Hardy against Lars Sullivan, that makes sense. The problem is it's a short list of babyfaces, but that's the case on both rosters right now. I mean, by losing Reigns and then having Strowman, you know, out of action, not for too long, but for a little while, and then you've turned Bobby Lashley and Dean Ambrose. I mean, you've got, after Seth Rollins right now, in terms of healthy babyfaces, is it Elias, Finn Balor, or Apollo Crews as your number two babyface? I mean, obviously it's between Finn Balor and Elias, but that's your depth chart right now in terms of the top four active guys. So, I think Lars doesn't have a long list of opponents if he comes in as a heel freak going after wrestlers. But for him to be the freak, he's got to be bigger than his opponents.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I think SmackDown would be the best place for him. But I was intrigued because somebody had mentioned, what do you think of him, if they want him in a prominent role, of him being brought in by Daniel Bryan as sort of his heavy, yeah, his bodyguard, yep, call him whatever you want. Yep. That's an interesting idea, and I think that could work.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, that definitely could work. And then it gives Bryan heat for, you know, Lars helping him win and Bryan not earning those victories. Because, you know, if you want Bryan to be a heel, and, I mean, Shinsuke did the low blow thing, so I hope they don't keep doing that with Bryan. Having Lars interfere on his behalf can be a good source of heel heat and keeping the fans on the side that they want them on.
Absolutely. And it could be a way to explain away another AJ loss at TLC, assuming he's going to lose again. That could be the place that they debut him.
And the way that they're hyping him in the vignettes and the announcers are talking about him, it's got to be a big splash. I don't think he just shows up 1 week after weeks of vignettes and wins a squash. I mean, it feels like they're trying to build up something bigger, something with more impact than that.
I agree.
Yep. Any thoughts on the New Day and what they did this week with their shtick?
No, not really. it feels to me like their shtick never really changes.
Yeah,
and it works for them. They are entertaining. I was mildly amused,
yeah,
by some of the stuff at the end of the match with Woods and with Miz. But to me it is such a tired act.
Yeah.
The pancake stuff. Again, I know people enjoy it and the kids enjoy it. But to me, it's long in the tooth and it doesn't really do much for me personally.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And I just, you know, when we talk about the weak babyface depth on both rosters, there's three guys right there who could add depth and be singles opponents for a deeper core of heels right now. And I mean, they got a good gig. I say it all the time. If I'm them, I keep earning that merch money and wrestling every third night. And, you know, it just, or, you know, and being in tag matches and saving wear and tear in my body and just goofing off. I mean, I get that from a selfish standpoint on their part. But if you're WWE and you're trying to utilize the equity built up with these guys and freshen them up, it's just, I mean, maybe we'll be saying this in 2 years, but it feels like there's something there, something more to be gotten out of collectively those three at this point. And watching them just do the same thing with Miz in what just amounts to kind of slapstick fluff, it just feels like the depth isn't there and their name value is high enough. Get more out of them.
Yeah, and we see the same matches with them over and over again. I mean, look, I love a good New Day versus Usos match like the next person, but I think that's something they have to get away from. I thought it was funny when Sheamus went on Twitter and he announced this open challenge and he said, it's an open challenge for anybody except New Day. because we've had enough of that. And I thought to myself, hallelujah, I agree. Yes. Although I will say the other half of me also said, boy, is this lazy, because we just had the open challenge gimmick on Raw last night and here we have it again tonight. And I think, you know, you start doing it too often. I mean, it's such a easy, lazy thing to fall back on instead of just naturally building up feuds. So I hope this isn't the start of a trend, you know, where Nakamura starts to come out and have open challenges as well. But yeah, I was pleased to see Sheamus make that statement. And the Big Show thing, by the way, we didn't touch on this, but it was a very brief segment they showed before their match where I guess the alliance with Big Show in the bar is no more. Now, does this count as the next turn? Yes.
I got the hashtags on my wall. I like adding to them every time. And this is one of the longest stretches. It's been several weeks since Big Show turned. So
yeah,
He's due.
I figured I was going to say the same thing. He's overdue, yes. I thought, for a turn. Yeah. Yes.
My final topic for you today, Shane McMahon. What have you thought that they actually intended to do with him in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel and with the World Cup thing? And do you think they have changed that course? And is he and where do they go from here with Shane and Miz? They're keeping it alive. And I got a kick out of Miz saying, you know, we have shared custody and we're basically parents. We're basically family. I mean, it's kind of fun to rib Shane about this. But where do you think it was supposed to go and where do you think it's headed?
I don't know that it was supposed to go anywhere except where it went. I mean, I know John Cena was supposed to be in that World Cup and he got removed. But I remember, you know, going into it thinking that, yeah. Now, I think the brackets changed, but in the original brackets in the opening round, I believe it was going to be John Cena against Rey Mysterio. And I remember seeing that and thinking to myself, okay, well, Rey's going to beat Cena. It just felt to me like Cena was probably going to lose. I don't know how different the tournament would have been otherwise. I think it may have ended up with Shane, you know, winning just like he did. And I think they're just building it's pretty obvious to me anyway. They're building to something maybe at TLC with him and Miz. I don't know if it'll be for the trophy or some other goofy stipulation. I don't know. But I think it's just a way to build something with Shane, get him on TV, and give Miz something to do. Because were it not for the stuff with Shane, Miz would be completely lost in the shuffle. I don't know what he would be doing right now were it not for the Shane stuff. So this may have been their plan all along. I can't say it excites me.
Yeah.
It, you know, it could give Shane an opponent and somebody to beat. But this whole thing with Shane and winning the tournament, and I don't know. I'm not really feeling it the way I am some of these other programs on SmackDown right now.
Do you think they thought Shane would be like cheered for doing what he did at the World Cup? He seemed a little surprised by being booed, and everything that he did he celebrated in an over the top fashion that seemed like either a very unself-aware babyface celebration or an attempt to be so over the top that he was being a heel. He got booed on SmackDown, but then since then, including all the way to this week, they've weaved themselves, and although Miz as a babyface fought Daniel Bryan in the dark match after SmackDown last week, but Miz is back to being a heel at house shows this weekend, back to being a heel tonight. Shane the babyface, Shane kind of rolling his eyes at Miz when Miz leaves the scene. Shane is the babyface and Miz is the foil. I just don't know, because it seemed like the booing of Shane, I guess, was a surprise. But there were smart people whose opinions I trust were like, well, obviously this is they're on a path to turning Shane heel. It's just the fans turned on him quicker than the booking indicated. But now I'm seeing no indication of the booking leaving any reason to think Shane is turning heel.
Yeah, I don't get that vibe at all. I really don't. I thought that might have been where this was going, where Shane coming out of that show was just going to be out of his mind and just over the top and full of himself. And they completely didn't go in that direction at all. In fact, when he came on TV the very next episode of SmackDown, he admitted. He said, oh, I know I'm not the best in the world. And it was like the complete opposite of that. I honestly look at it and I think two things. Number one, the Saudi Arabia show was all about big names. They had John Cena on there originally before he pulled out, Daniel Bryan, Kurt Angle, right? Hulk Hogan made an appearance, even though WWE would rather you not remember that. So there were a lot of big names on that show. And I think to those fans and to the company when they put this thing together, Shane McMahon, he's got the McMahon name. He's a big name that people associate with the Attitude Era and years gone by. And when he won, he got a big reaction. It wasn't like the people crapped on it. The people, you know, in the stadium there cheered when he won. So I think part of it was just they wanted him to have a prominent role because he's considered to be a big name. And the other aspect of it is they may have looked at that and said, well, we're going to do Raw versus SmackDown in Survivor Series. And so what better way to kickstart, you know, a Raw versus SmackDown feud and build to this men's Survivor Series match than have Shane McMahon pull one over on Raw? And that can sort of lead into Survivor Series, even though, in all honesty, it didn't really lead to much of anything. And that's one of my big issues with Survivor Series when they do that, is there's never any repercussions coming out of it. There's never any fallout. It just ends up, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts were about this after the pay-per-view. I was just completely flabbergasted when they did not even address the idea that SmackDown was swept by Raw. It's almost like it just was so inconsequential. Shane didn't seem to care. Paige didn't seem to care. I thought that was so insulting. And it just goes to show you that I don't know how much forethought is even put into those things when they do this. It doesn't seem like a lot of thought was put into it at all.
No, I mean, for Shane to say this is such a big deal that if you lose, you're fired in the World Cup, like that that meant the world to him. Survivor Series, we're told, is brand supremacy, brand pride. It means everything. And yeah, good luck trying to convince people of that next year. You know, I mean, they'll do it. They'll try to convince people of it. I think people are going to remember, well, the losing team that got swept last year just brushed it off and didn't care. I mean, I was amazed that, you'd say, well, how can you be surprised by anything? I really thought, and I think Shane even tweeted, like, big changes coming on SmackDown. I think that they just totally dropped the ball on that storyline, and I think fans felt like suckers for thinking it would have mattered to the losing team.
Yeah, and you talk about the Shane heel turn and how there's no real evidence that that may be on the horizon. That would have been the perfect opportunity for it. Oof, you know, he comes out the next, two nights later, and he is so furious and so embarrassed, just thoroughly embarrassed by, you know, SmackDown getting their butts handed to them at the pay-per-view, that he either threatens to fire people, he starts acting, you know, like this, like a typical heel commissioner or GM would act. And again, there was no indication of that at all. Instead, it was almost like they were doing lighthearted comedy with him and Miz. And I'm just thinking to myself, you guys got embarrassed two nights earlier, and it didn't mean anything. Yeah. It literally felt like it was just their way of proving and showing that Raw is and will forever be, in their eyes, the dominant brand. And I don't know why you would do that, considering where SmackDown is headed next year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they have a year to build SmackDown up. But even then, I think Raw is their baby, and it's always going to be positioned that way.
Jason, thank you so much. Pleasure talking to you about this show and trying to figure things out.
Thank you. I was happy to get a show tonight that was far better than what we got the night before.
Yes. Tell people once again what to search for or where to find your shows.
Easiest way is to head to thesolemonster.com. I'm on Twitter at Solemonster. And you can find the YouTube channel. Just type in Solemonster Sounds Off, and you'll see all the little soundbite clips and pay-per-view reviews. And you can hit the sub button there.
Excellent. All right. So don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller and follow our brand on Twitter at PW Torch. On Facebook, you can friend me at facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch and like our brand at facebook.com/PW Torch. We're also on Instagram at PW Torch. And don't forget to visit our MMA site called MMATorch.com. Visit MMATorch.com for daily news updates, exclusive articles, editorials on the hot topics in the world of MMA, live event coverage, fight card previews, and so much more. New managing editor Mike Hisko has amped up the content of that website. If you're an MMA fan, you owe it to yourself to check it out every single day. That's MMATorch.com. Also, check out PWPodcast.com, talking about amped up content. More reviews than we've had in a long time of pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts updated throughout the week. Long form reviews and analysis and just catching you up on what's said that's noteworthy on podcasts that you might not be able to fit into your schedule. That's pwpodcasts.com. And if you're interested in volunteering and helping us fill out some of the gaps in our coverage of big name hosted podcasts covering pro wrestling, drop me a line at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. And of course, don't forget pwtorch.com, your home for news, live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, TV reports, editorials, special features, flashbacks, and more. That's pwtorch.com. Content you will not find anywhere else on a daily basis at pwtorch.com. Thanks, everybody. If you missed it, check out yesterday's show, a long review of last night's episode, or Monday night's episode of Monday Night Raw with on-site correspondent, a couple of them actually, and also a mailbag segment and live caller. Zach Cadorn from PW Torch was my co-host. It was not a good episode of Raw. It was, I think, a really good episode of the podcast, of the Wade Keller Post Show. So hope you'll take time to check that out if you haven't downloaded it yet. Do that. And then later in the week, the Thursday flagship, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. Don't forget to send in your questions for the flagship for Jason and me to address on the flagship. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Don't forget to support us every time you're thinking of shopping at Amazon. Don't go to Amazon.com. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. And then click on the Amazon logo. Takes you right to the Amazon homepage. That's a great way for you to do a little tiny something extra that makes a big difference for us when all of you do it. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Just that extra detour when a lot of you do it can really make a big difference to us here. So I thank you to those of you who are doing it already and encourage everyone to do it. pwtorch.com/Amazon. All right, that does it for me for today. Big thanks to Jason Solomon and my co-host. Thanks to our on-site correspondents, Matt and CJ. Thanks to those who called and the emails. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week. And also all seven PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post-pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell audio show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com. If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.